football on off the ball.
I know we questioned the decision to give him a new contract pre-game, which still feels a little bit odd, but ultimately I think he deserves it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Road Safety Authority. Bringing you awareness of distracted driving this bank holiday weekend.
This is News Talk.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Our WhatsApp number today, 0879 180 180. Any Liverpool fans out there for a rant? Because you're 4-0 down away to Manchester City in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Erling Haaland hat-trick at the Etihad. There's only an hour gone. Antoine Semenya with the other goal. An Exeter 31, Munster 14 in the Challenge Cup. 10 minutes left there. Munster going out of the Challenge Cup, you would have to assume. So the Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by the Road Safety Authority, bringing you awareness of distracted driving this bank holiday weekend. If you look at your phone for 1 second, travelling at 50 kilometres per hour, you travel the length of four cars without watching the road. Put the phone away. So the sports story of 2025 for many of us was Rory McIlroy's incredible win at the Masters Tournament at Augusta. The Hollywood golfer completed the career grand slam in golf after an incredible final round, which saw him win in a playoff over Justin Rose. Now, McIlroy will bring the green jacket back to Georgia this week before he begins the defence of his title on Thursday. Shane Lowry and Tom McKibben also in the field from an Irish perspective, while the world number one and two-time Masters winner Scottie Scheffler is the bookie's favourite. To preview the Masters over the next hour, we have Gary Murphy, an ex-European Tour pro and the current head pro of the K Club, and Gavin Cooney, the sports writer with the 42.ie and the co-writer of The Racket with Conor Nyland, the 2024 William Hill Sportsbook of the Year. In esteemed company, Gary and Gavin, how are we both?
Very good.
Very well, apart from the 4-0 to Man City.
You are red?
Yes, I am for my sins. But you're a sports fan.
Well,
so,
yeah. There.
We all have our problems.
All our problems are relative.
Exactly.
You're going to Augusta, are you, Gavin? When's your flight?
Fly tomorrow morning, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Went in 2023, haven't been back. Missed last year, not really sure what happened last year. But I'm locked in, good to go this year, so looking forward to it.
So you were there when John Rahm won.
John Rahm won, yeah. I remember it was washed out on the Friday and they had to play virtually two rounds on the Saturday. I remember Rahm winning. My main memory is actually Tiger, who heroically battled to make the cut. He equaled the cut streak at that point. I think it was 23 straight cuts. Freddie Couples and someone else, he tied it. I think he's gone on to beat it since. But I just remember in the lashings of rain on Saturday, him limping around and he slipped down the hill on the sixes and six par three. Slipped down that hill and just looked like an old man, you know. And that's actually the kind of quite grim image I have that stands out most vividly on my mind from that Masters. And kind of amazing that 3 years on, we were still talking about him potentially coming back to do it all over again. But obviously, events intervened.
It's a sad week, really, isn't it, for Tiger Woods?
It is. I think the timing of
the body cam footage as well. There's no hiding place after what he did.
Not in America anyway. I mean, I don't really know why we're seeing that body cam footage. It's obviously fascinating, but in a very kind of grim, voyeuristic sense. I don't really know why we have to watch that stuff.
Too many car accidents. Obviously, golf needs to play its part now. Once process, due process with the legal situations taken its course, that the sport would be wise maybe. Do you think the sport has a dependency on Woods?
As a storyline, maybe not so much playing anymore, but as a bit of a curiosity factor, I just think the recent thing, because he's always been so aloof and, you know, and I'm getting ready at home kind of story, and this blows it out of the water a little bit. So I think the curtain's been pulled back. It's sad. I'm not gloating on this by any stretch. I'm a huge fan of him and what he's done for the sport, but socially, he needs to sort a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he needs to get well. There's a responsibility element to it. Four car crashes now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, get him off the road.
And you can't get a driver.
Yeah, well, evidently he doesn't want one. I've seen a couple of American sports writers or golf guys who are pretty close to him or would seem to be close to him say that he wants to drive because he feels in control. You can psychoanalyze that. Yeah. You can psychoanalyze that perspective, but clearly, he's having all these crashes, he shouldn't be on the road. You know, I know the instant response is to feel kind of curiosity and fascination and sympathy and empathy for the man. And I think that's appropriate to some extent. But also, he's not only a danger to himself on the roads, but a danger to everybody else. Yes. So I think there's time for some responsibility to be taken there. And then the other responsibilities around, you know, just getting better from a personal and professional point of view, he's evidently doing that now. So yeah, it's another Masters taking place without him.
And without Phil Mickelson as well, who has a private personal health matter to attend to. So all we can do is wish him and his family well. The first time since 1994, no Tiger or Phil, and no, they won't be at the dinner for Rory this year.
That's a little disappointing, I think. Probably not the Phil factor, because Rory and Phil have had issues in recent years. But I think for, with the Grand Slam and stuff, and Tiger's got it, and Jack has it, and Gary has it, and the other Gary, not this one. But that's a little sad for Rory, that Tiger's not going to be there. But still, I'm sure he'll have a wonderful evening.
I've been there as well. I was there a couple of years ago when Scotty Scheffler won. You were there, what, 1993, you played Augusta?
I played it. I went to university in Augusta, and 93-94 was Langer and Olathabal. I think Olathabal, he stayed up on 15, but like Freddie Couples on 12. So, yeah, it was kind of cool because my roommate was Craig Toshack, who was John Toshack's son.
All right.
And we got tickets through Olathabal's manager. And then, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, it was just, you know, like it was Christmas Day stuff. And I went back then, kind of working in 2015, and I actually found that really emotional. It was just going back to Augusta, and it's a special place. It's a different town, but the, you know, spring break for the university is the week of the Masters, so they really buy into the tournament. It's huge for the locality, so it's if anyone ever has a chance, I'm very jealous of Gavin flying out tomorrow, but it's a unique tournament, and if the opportunity ever does come somebody's way, they should avail of it.
So playing it as a young golfer, what was it like to play the course?
It was, I actually worked with this sports psychologist towards the end of my career when I needed a psychiatrist, not a sport psychologist, one of his things was, you know, you want to feel like you're walking in the footsteps of champions, you know, and have that aura about you when you're, that was one of his mantras, which kind of made sense. But when I played the course, that's exactly what it felt like. Now, what point you were on a certain hole you could remember, you know, because in those days, this is kind of mid-90s, our first tournament to watch back in the 80s was the Masters. It's not the saturation point that we have nowadays. So it was really cool. It was a particularly windy day, so the course didn't really play as normal. But, you know, George Bush Sr. had just retired from office. He was there playing that day with a few members. We got to meet him, which was cool. Davis Love was playing a practice round for the tournament, which was actually a complete waste of time because the day we played, the greens weren't quick at all. And you'd kind of wonder why, you know, there were probably, I'd say, 2.5 feet slower than what they would have been for the tournament, but maybe it's just the Augusta factor. He just wanted to go and play. But yeah, it was a special day.
Make any birdies?
I shot 77. I shot 5 over. I shot level on the front nine and I was cruising. And then a bit of splash world on the
Grays Creek.
No, I actually 14. I double bogeyed 14.
Right.
And it was a front right pin and I left it short right. And literally, the TV never does it justice. Couldn't get it up and couldn't get it close. And then 3-putted and made 6. But it was, the score was kind of important, but yes and no.
I would describe the Masters as like going to New York City for the first time, if you've ever been, and you feel like you're walking around a movie and everything is recognizable. And uh-huh. So you get the first thing you do, you know, like the yellow cab, the first thing I ever did in America. Yeah. And you're walking around the skyscrapers and you're going, this is what this is like. The Masters is the same. It's like literally walking into the television. That's the way I would describe it. Like Mike TV and Willy Wonka, you've walked into the TV and you see all these holes that you recognize. I mean, watching Miles Dungan with my dad in the 80s and then watching Peter Alice and BBC and Steve Ryder when they were doing the coverage and all these holes. And you're thinking, wow, this is what this place is. The standards are off the scale in terms of the preparation. There's not a blade of grass out of place, but it's all done in this very polite, charming Southern way in America. Obviously, the club has not been perfect for 100 years, you would have to say, but there is something like absolutely perfect about it. Almost Wizard of Oz. Almost, almost a bit. Where is it? You pull the curtain back. Is there is something a bit Truman Show about the whole place?
Yeah.
But it's, you feel like you've walked through into the television, and that's the amazing thing. And then the things you see, like the first hole, it's nothing in reality like the TV because of the undulations. It's just like a big skateboard ramp.
Yeah.
Then the 12th, and you go to Amen Corner, it looks miles away.
Mm.
And then you see the tee shot in 18, so narrow, but it's the things that, it's just got so many quirks. And what I love about the Masters is, as well, and this does not apply, I don't think, to any of the sports, it cost me $5,000 to get there, and probably the best, because I don't have any kids, probably the best $5,000 I've ever spent, because I worked for free and I paid my own way. But you don't have any phones on the course. And what other sporting event in the world do you have thousands of people where there's no phones?
That is the key. And I know some people will listen and just like, oh, what a middle-aged opinion. Like, I mean, get out of your phone and get back in the moment. But it is so much better. So you know, you get, there are no phones. So everybody is just so absorbed / entranced into where they are, what they're doing. I remember, I want to say it was Trevor Immelman, maybe it was Jeff Ogilvie, saying that the applause you hear at Augusta is unlike the applause anywhere else, because everybody is applauding because there's nothing else in their hands, you know? And the one thing that really struck me about being there was, I didn't have a watch because I'm used to using my phone just for the time. So if you're ever going, do bring a watch, because you'll have no idea what time it is. But you'll also have really no idea what year it is, really. Like, there's almost nothing around the course that could convince you that it's 2026. You'll see an odd TV camera, but they're hidden from view as best they can. You'll see a Visa machine at the concession stands. Otherwise, it could be any year, you know? So that's what they're, the tradition like no other, what are they cultivating and preserving. It's that sense of like, this is when America, I know you were talking about, you know, when I'm like going to New York, it is and it isn't, because like modern America is more about the coastal cities and the brusqueness of, you know, this is the America of NFL and brusque football rather than baseball. It's just these long, languorous afternoons. And the Masters is a throwback to, you know, 18th century, early 19th century America, where it was more about the South, more about the, you know, rural areas, southern gentlemen. It feels like stepping back into a time warp then, with all its attendant complications and problems that you've referenced there as regards to how the club is sometimes, while preserving tradition, have struggled to be dragged into the 21st century at times.
And it was Woods actually who did that.
They're in a better spot now as regards that stuff. But yeah, that's the no phone thing is genius. And Bob Dylan does it. He doesn't allow phones in to his concerts. The Masters do it. I think everyone should really try and follow suit. Although, obviously, there's a, you know, communication point of view, like you always want to have your phone to be in touch with people.
But there are telephones on the course.
The Masters would kind of afford to do that.
What I was fascinated about was when they cut you off, because you could ring Ireland and ring your uncle and say, look, and talk for half an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I did that. But it was like, there's just something. You walk in there and you almost feel like, you know, I'm of the, I don't know, an 80s child or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, some manners. It was drilled into as a kid, you know, please and thank you and Mr. and Mrs. And that's completely gone out of society to a certain extent.
It's almost like when you go to a foreign country and you speak, the French comes back to you about ordering something. The civility comes back into you.
Totally.
You're afraid almost to get that tap on the shoulder of you?
And the tap is just around the corner if you don't behave yourself. Yeah. So
the first time I went as a journalist, I was like, it was like having my first ever dinner with my in-laws, like for a full 7 days. I was never quite sure if I was acting properly or anything. And like the media center, as you'll know, John, is like, you know, this, it's like some giant mansion out of Gone with the Wind. Like, I mean, it's outrageous. It's extra, you know, as the kids would say. But there is a sign going in from, I think it's Cliff Roberts, who is the co-founder, saying that, you know, the Masters has always had unusually good relations with the press or something, which is also like a, you know, the text being, you know, we've always looked after the media. The subtext being the media have always looked after us, you know.
Well, they want your material after the tournament. They want to see what you've written.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And we're not trying to be smoke here about telling, oh, you know, we've been to the Masters or whatever. I'm just saying that, folks, if you're interested in going as a lifetime trip, does it live up to expectations? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For me, it did.
It does.
I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone that's gone and didn't go, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So everybody can't be wrong. And it's, and normally, and I think even in the last, you know, the way they've moved, they've modernized so many features with the players, and there's a new feature this year with the preparation and stuff. And but yet they still seem to manage, like it's been around 9, 10, 11 under par the last few years. Like the course, even though it's changed enormously, they've maintained the distance challenge better than everybody else, really.
Rory McIlroy, I watched the documentary on Amazon, the Masters Weight, and I saw the photo the other day on social media of him with all four trophies, the Giants Causeway, the green jacket. And I was thinking to myself, how amazing is this? And when we look back in a few years' time, how amazing was this that we have a person from this island who has won all four majors, the career Grand Slam, and has won the Masters, an Irishman wins the Masters, who represented Ireland at amateur level, an Irish Olympian. Have we ever had a global star as big as this? I mean, maybe golf is dwarfed by football, and you think Roy Keane or Liam Brady or even Eddie Jordan as an Irish figure of sporting worldwide renown. But it's hard to match what Rory is in terms of a figurehead. And we talk about Tiger's troubles. Rory carries it pretty well.
Totally. Yeah,
he does. Like, and he's had an amazing consistency throughout his career. I know he didn't win a major from 14 and all of that. And that, listen, Tiger didn't do it either. But year in, year out, he's always been, you know, steadfast in one or two or three, always in the top 10 in the world, which is astonishing, really. You know, just even at that level. But he's been a level above that since, probably since Wells Fargo when he first won on the PGA Tour. And that's, this is what, his 17th season at that level, which is phenomenal.
And he's done it all by giving more of himself to the public and the media than he needs to, really. I mean, one of the reasons why we all connected with last year's story and enjoyed it so much and we'll never forget it is that it was such a journey in which he brought everyone with him, because he was so he's an emotional guy anyway, but he was open with his vulnerabilities, especially in the last few years. And, you know, after the US Open, saying I'd go through 100 Sundays like this to get my hands on one more major, yeah. All that stuff, like there's no need to, you know, when you're that, you know, when you're that successful, you're that famous, you don't have to be that giving of your time and, more pertinently, of your personality and of yourself. That he chose to do so has made himself obviously way more popular and more people following both him. But he's also done it for the good of the sport. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of the live stuff, one of the talking points handed to the players by the PR company was, we're here to grow the game. And none of, or at least very few of them, believed it. He does actually genuinely, I think, does carry a sense that I am a bit of an ambassador for the sport, and, you know, has done certain things because it's for the betterment of the sport. And it's part of that as well. He's obsessed with golf. He loves the history of the game. And it's so important for him that he's now among that rarefied list of Grand Slam winners, which is obviously what made it so hard, I would imagine, to get over the line at Augusta. But now that he's done it, it's remarkable.
Manchester City 4, Liverpool 0 in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Haaland has just gone off the pitch after scoring a hat-trick there at the Etihad. We got Gary Murphy and Gavin Cooney on the Saturday panel here on Off the Ball Saturday News Talk, talking about the Masters, which starts on Thursday. A few of the things I picked up from the documentary, Gary, the positivity that Gerry and Rosie infused in Rory as an only child, and that when they were practicing in Hollywood, Gerry would make the hole a par 5 rather than a par 4. So if he got a 4, he'd be a birdie and infect him with positivity. The fact that he loves the longer game more maybe than the putting game, but he had the positivity and that ability to have that really thinking mindset that when things go wrong, sometimes the head drops, and when things are going right, like there is an artistry to that. And you could really see that in 15 last year. I mean, it was one of the greatest golf shots you're ever going to see in a major championship. That everything was on the line. He'd thrown it away a couple of times, and now it was really slipping against Justin Rose, and then he produces that.
It was, and that was kind of his genius, really, that he had the ability to hit that shot. That shot's easy for him. That's the kind of scary thing. You know, he's done it so many times. Like when he first came out on tour, there's always this expression with, you know, exceptionally talented players that they have gears. You know, and he's always had gears. I played a practice round with him in South Africa when he needed to finish his, I think, top 5 or something to get in the top 50 in the world to get into the majors the following year. This was end of season stuff. You know, so he did have that stepping stone, But he was doing it at like six or seven events. It was ridiculous. But and you that day in particular on the 17th, we were hitting drivers and we were kind of David Drysdale actually, who won last year, he was in the three ball. And we were kind of roundabout. He was also obviously a bit longer. And then we got on this hole and he hit three wood like 30 yards past our drivers. You know, it was just, and you, we kind of, David and I looked at one another and you're like, this isn't normal stuff. But all the expectation that went with that, the way he's managed that, and I do think it's because of Gerry and Rosie. Such normal people, you know, really genuinely nice folk, that mixed marriage, all of that stuff to it. They would have gone through a lot of turmoil, I'm sure, back in the day. So really good people. And he's basically, as an only child, a lot of, you know, single kids are a little different to what he is. And he really has done phenomenally well to maintain the normalcy that he has in his life.
You played with Darren, Graham McDowell, Padraig Harrington. Did you just know that's something? Do you know that, or does that just...
You do. I mean, Darren was special too, ball striking wise. You know, there weren't too many better than Darren, but... just a little level above. You know, I think Darren Clark, when he was, you know, on his game, but whilst he had it, and is still having a phenomenal career, he didn't have that extra factor, and that's the mindset factor too. So Rory kind of has it all.
I'm interested in the documentary, Gavin, as well, that, and the only child, and I'm going to do it my way. Looking for help, I think, has been a big part of McIlroy's progression into now the Grand Slam elite, where Bob Rotella and Brad Faxon, the putting and the mind, he's got the help that maybe has given him that extra.
Yeah, he's got the right kind of help. I mean, the help that those guys have done have basically kind of stressed the fact that, you know, the eternal phrase of Rory McIlroy's career, of his former caddy, is "You're effing Rory McIlroy."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because he's gone to guys like Pete Cowan in previous years and it's not really worked. You know, there was that, maybe his one lull, like the one point at which he may have even have fallen out of the top 15 in the world, was when he was chasing speed, looking like Rory went off chasing speed and kind of got lost, you know. And there's a reminder that, you know, he just needs to go back to, you know, what makes him Rory McIlroy. So even Faxon, like, I think one of the first putting session he did with him was handed him a three wood and said, "Put with that." And he, you know, three putts, drain them all. It's just like going back to instincts, going back to feeling free. This is what Rotella's, this is what he works with Rotella. Just like, you know, we want to be a positive mindset. I can't control what happens out there, but I can control how I react. And he talked about this last year, McIlroy. He likes to imagine golf as like just this game of adventure. I'm whacking a white ball around. Let's see where it lands. And this is why Harry Diamond is his caddy. And this is why Harry Diamond is the perfect caddy for him, because he's Rory's friend. They know each other since they were 6 or 7 years of age. And Harry Diamond knows to let Rory McIlroy hit the Rory McIlroy shot when he needs to. Seven on Sunday last year being the obvious example. He's gone left into the trees. Harry is saying, just kind of chip out onto the fairway here. We'll make four and move on. And Rory's just like, I think I see a gap. And obviously, maybe Harry saw the gap but was afraid of his life of it. But in fairness, Harry knew, like, you're going to hit that, you're going to hit that. I'm not going to stop you. So hits it, and obviously hits it to a couple of feet, or maybe 6 feet. And then, okay, disappointingly, leaves the putt short. But you can see Rory cracking his hole, laughing with him afterwards. And it was class to see that, because there was obviously so much tension, especially in the early holes of that Sunday. So he's found help, he has, but it's generally been the guys that reminded him that you have a natural talent unlike anyone else out here. So you just go, be aggressive, swing free, and just be yourself. And I think, you know, if we want to call them the wilderness years, which is fairly harsh because he wasn't winning majors, but he was consistently near the top of the world rankings and winning other tournaments, there was a kind of a loss of perspective on, oh, you know, I am good enough. I myself am good enough to do this. I don't need to impersonate anyone else.
So what about this week for Rory McIlroy? He's got the ceremony of the week to deal with. He's defending champion. There's no pressure on him. But his form has been, what, tied 46 of the players. Slide back issue, saw him withdraw from the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Is it hard for him to just flick a switch this week, despite all of his talent?
If you take a little bit of, you know, that injury was, you know, we can kind of draw a line under that, but his form has not been massively different to, I know he won the Players. Schedule's been similar. He's played one event less. I just think he's going to be so much more relaxed going in this week. I think if he wins this week, he's not going to win it in the same fashion as he won last year. You know, so the build up, and even like even over the years, the last, I'd probably say the last five or six as such, because the first, you know, 2015 and the next couple of years, you're not, it's not building as much. I know the thing happened in 2011, but I do think he'll be way more relaxed. It's kind of like Tiger Woods prep. He's had 3 weeks at home getting ready. I'm not saying he's going to win, because I wish I knew the answer to that question, but I do think he'll have a solid week. I think the first round will, if he has a sloppy, lazy 74, maybe not. But I think if he can cruise it around and break 70 the first day, if conditions are pretty normal, I think he'll have a very good defence. He's a brilliant record around here as well. Let's see those.
Yeah. You know? It's hard to... Interesting watching the Amazon documentary. His father, Jerry, mentioned the fact that in the weeks coming up to Augusta, Rory wouldn't be quite Rory. He'd be a little bit jumpy or a little bit edgy. So for the first time ever, he can enjoy these couple of weeks. Like, he'll be different. Now, whether that dulls his competitive edge, we'll have to wait and see. He gave an interview to The Guardian that ran yesterday. He's adamant that it won't dull his competitive edge. But, you know, I can imagine up to now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday were probably the worst parts of the week, really, for him. This time around, they're going to be the best parts, because, you know, he'll love being a champion. He'll love all the traditions. He'll love being like, I'll be the champion that Augusta expects me to. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns up at the Augusta National Women's Amateur today. He'll obviously have the Champions Dinner Tuesday. I think all that stuff will allow him to enjoy, just enjoy himself. And it's not unprofessional to do that. He deserves to enjoy it. I think that maybe just kind of, as a result, may just take him a little bit out of contention. But like you say, if he can... You know, his problem up to last year were his slow starts, and that was generally put down to pressure. You know, if I can take myself out of the running on the first day, I don't have to deal with this pressure for 4 days. I can then chase it from half a lost cause. So maybe with the pressure off, he'll kind of automatically play well on Thursday. So I can see him backdooring a top 10. It's just given the week that's in it. I just feel it hard to see him outright content.
I don't know. I think he'll... Now, the wine on offer on Tuesday night looks quite spectacular, unless he gets a bit busy with that, which I can't imagine he will. But I just... He knows he can win around there, because he's won around there last year. I don't know, up to recent years, there was always a little bit of maybe. There's no maybe anymore. So I do see him having a decent week.
But Shane Lowry then, 39 years of age now, best chance might have been 4 years ago. Although he did shoot 81 when he was...
Last year was a chance, I've got to say.
As well.
He was lucky Rory won, because no one mentioned his 81 in the last round. Like, he got away with murder.
Then we had the Cognizant Classic recently, where he had a couple of double bogeys, had a double bogey in Dubai earlier this year. Is it easy to put that stuff out of your mind if he's back in the loop? I mean, I suppose he's done the biggest things that you can in the game. He's won the Open, either winning or putting the Ryder Cup. So he should surely, given those things have happened, be able to put any setbacks out of his mind.
Listen, they're in the front of his mind at the moment. That's the hard part. You never forget them, but you have to learn from mistakes. Everyone makes the mistakes. Everyone. Tiger was probably the one player that never really messed up. Like, never, probably. So everyone messes up. It's how you learn from the mess up. I think West Palm Beach, he lost concentration on 16, and then he got spooked by the tee shot. And he didn't fix it quick enough. So that would be the learning on that. It's easy to say fix it, but listen, he has to have the tools to fix it. That's why he's one of the best players in the world. I do think Houston a couple of weeks ago will have settled him down a bit. He loves it around here. He's got the added thing, that inspiration of, if Rory doesn't win and I win, he's putting the jacket on me. So that narrows down his focus, and he should be thinking that way. He should win more golf tournaments than what he does, because he's an outstanding talent, and he'll be as frustrated by that as anyone else. But, oh, so Larry needs a good start. I think it's a hard place to chase. Historically, you know, you can throw your hat over the winners after the first round almost. So,
9 top 10 finishers in majors. Definitely capable of winning more.
Yeah, we say that about everyone, I suppose, but definitely in the case of Larry, it's true. He's got the game to win it, really. He's got the iron play to win it, along with the two question marks are the mental game after the Cognizant. It's like, It's wrong to call him a choker when you see what he did, obviously the Ryder Cup, but what he did at the Open is underrated as well, because we see the winning score was so large. But at the same time, he won that on Saturday with the 63, and then he had to spend a whole day on Sunday in wretched weather in Ireland going out not to lose it, which is like very, very, you know, generally players just win a major. Rarely does the week have a cadence in which you win it and then have to not lose it across a whole day. So that he kept his nerve there is underrated, I think, and quite outstanding. But there's, you know, in individual tournaments, you know, was it the Truist last year? He kind of felt he threw that away. Cognizant, obviously, this year. He's got to prove to himself that he can do it down the stretch. And unfortunately, it's like Rory, you can only prove to yourself that you can do it once you have done it, which is the most difficult thing. And then the other element is just if the putter plays ball, you know, I mean, he himself has admitted in the past that he can be a streaky putter. If that can catch fire and he can start holding putts, then he's a great chance.
I do think he's a much, as McIlroy is too, and Brad Faxon probably hasn't got enough credit, but Shane's putting has improved dramatically as well. Like, they're all using that spider putter. I use one. I wish it was as easy as that, but it is a really good putter. But I do think since he's switched to that putter, he looks way more convincing on the greens. And I just love. I think he needs to get into contention pretty soon again after the Cognizant. But listen, he's a good record around here. There's no reason why he can't feel like he's a very good chance.
Tom McKibben's on debut after winning in Hong Kong, and he won the European Open a few years ago. He's gone to live. He's, 23 years of age now, Tom. It's just about soaking it up for this weekend, isn't it, Tom?
Yes and no. I think he'll be very keen to do well. He played very well on live last year. He's had a slow enough start this year. He had an amazing win in Hong Kong on the Asian Tour to get into this event. So he's a quality, quality player.
What's good about his game?
Everything. He does everything well. There's no massive weakness to his game. He's young and kind of precocious, so he's got to, like, the goal has to be try finish top 12 and get back for next year.
Masters bingo, this can be our first mention of Fuzzy Zeller, the last guy to win on debut. It's so hard to win on debut around there. You just got to, you know, it becomes why was Woods still able to win there in 2019? Apparently because he knows the place so well. He knows where to miss it, the right place to miss, the wrong place to miss. You accrue all this knowledge over time. You can only get so much of it watching off TV. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to win as a debutant. So you have to say, like, you know, that would be fanciful. But I think I'm going off memory. He may have missed one cut in his major so far. McKibben, he's generally done pretty well for himself when he's made his bow in the biggest events. So you know, he's a massive talent. The frustration is that the Irish public doesn't really know him at all. Apparently he hasn't really done a huge amount to allow people to get to know him, which is fine, that's his prerogative. He's different to McIlroy in that sense, and obviously going to live is a limelight killer. You know, he had a card for the PGA Tour and decided to trade it in, and again, that's his prerogative. People can be disappointed in him if they want, so this is a chance obviously to allow people to get to know him, and he's got the game to do so.
You a fan of Liv, Joe?
Hate it. Absolutely.
Say what you think, John. Really? Yeah.
What is the virtue of Liv?
I know. I get both sides. Like we had Damien on the podcast, Damien Delaney, and he
Golf Weekly.
Yeah, he loves it. Like absolutely loves it. And I know, I was massively against it initially, but some of the events where I know the venue. I think we're so familiar with the PGA Tour, or the DP World Tour. And there's a lot of tradition that, you know, it'll never catch up because I don't think it will prevail hugely.
But it's good to see a tournament in Australia, for example, which has got a real heritage with golf.
Yeah.
And I do think there is maybe an argument for bringing the Open worldwide, like it is the Open Championship. And occasionally, I mean, Portmarnock is not in the British United Kingdom. Mm. And it could go there. And to bring the Open to Royal Melbourne in the future or something like that could be something that...
Yeah, I'm not crazy about that now, I have to say. Yeah. But under the principle that, you know, Scotty Scheffler will play more times in Texas this year than he'll play outside America. Like, I mean, that's not to criticise Scheffler too much. It's just, you know, it's become too American-centric. The game itself has become quite Floridized.
It's funny, the Liv golfers haven't played in America.
Yeah.
Because they've been all across the world. So it's to me, it was all about Saudi geopolitical dominance and money.
The game is not big enough for the top players not to be playing against each other.
Sport is about competition, the best against the best, and testing yourself against the best. And if you're like, Darts was able to overcome the two tours eventually, that one of them just then, you know.
But is snooker going to move? There was five.
No. The Crucible is staying until 2045. Okay, so snooker. Fantastic. So I don't think sports, you know, fracturing on the basis of Saudi geopolitics and money is the right way to go. Because you want to see John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler. Like, you want to see those tournaments just below the majors, where you'd have the players. You'd have Cam Smith there, and you'd have John Rahm, and you'd have Bryson, and you'd have all these great players just against each other every week, because otherwise you're just watching it four times a year.
Yeah. Increasingly, it's only really Rahm and DeChambeau you really miss.
Like Cam Smith, I don't think his game has benefited from going to LIV. No, at all.
He was the guy, and it's easy to be noble when you're not involved, but like, he was just such at the top of his game. You know, he's won the Players, he's won the Open in St Andrews, and like, how much money do you need? You know, he was probably making 50, 60 million that year anyway, but it's affected him. He's definitely taken his foot off the gas. Mm. I think Rahm, to be fair to Rahm and DeChambeau, like, they've really shown their professionalism. Like, Rahm has been phenomenal on LIV, week in, week out for the 14 weeks of the year. But I think they'll both have a live chance next week.
Absolutely, and we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. Just got to take a break here on the Saturday panel on Off the Ball here on News Talk. Manchester City 4, Liverpool 0 in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Erling Haaland hat-trick sending City into the semi-finals. And it was a bit of a comeback from Munster. It had to be, really, but they've been knocked out of the Challenge Cup by Exeter, 31-21. At Sandy Park, and they will have to rely now on the URC to get into the top eight to reach their Champions Cup status for next season. If you want to WhatsApp us, you can 087-9180-180 with Gavin Cooney and Gary Murphy on the Masters. Who are your contenders? Who's going to win this week? What's your feeling about the tournament? Any questions for the lads? You can text us 087-9180-180. We're back after this break.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Road Safety Authority. Bringing you awareness of distracted driving this bank holiday weekend.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. Part 2 of the Saturday panel, previewing the Masters with Gary Murphy, ex-European Tour player and the current head pro at the K Club, and Gavin Cooney, the sports writer with the 42.ie and co-writer of The Racket with Conor Nyland, the 2024 William Hill Sports Book of the Year. The Masters, golf's first major 2026, begins at Augusta on Thursday. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by the Road Safety Authority, bringing you awareness of distracted driving this bank holiday weekend. If you look at your phone for 1 second, travelling at 50 kilometres an hour, you travel the length of four cars without watching the road. Put the phone away. Let's look at the other contenders then for the Masters. We have a text in here, 087-9180-180 on our WhatsApp. Going to follow Ludvig Åberg for a few holes this afternoon in the Texas Open. He hits a lot of fairways and greens. My only worry for him next week is the slick greens in Augusta and the slower place on Thursday and Friday, says Liam. In Texas, tuning in. Fair play to you, Liam, for tuning in. And Åberg, I followed him around a couple of years ago, was second on debut. This guy has got definitely between the ears. I know he didn't finish one of the Players, but he seems to have that Swedish calm.
Yeah, he's my pick, I've got to say. Yeah. I'm on the same page as the texter there. He, second on debut. I think it was T8 last year, but like, made a royal mess of 18. I remember McIlroy having to spend ages on the tee as Ludvig was kind of ping-ponging it from either side of that green out of the bunker. He's a fantastic player. Like, I mean, that he should have won the Players, really. Was it a Friday 63 that was just, you know, so like, it looked so easy for him. Obviously, he then threw away the Players by going into the water on 11 or wherever it was. And you can ask, maybe that's scar tissue and maybe that means he won't win, but, you know, pain can also just be information to improve things in the future. And I think maybe, you know, he spoke afterwards that he's probably moving too fast. Like, the great thing about watching Åberg is his speed of play. Like, I mean, it's actually just one look and go, which is magnificent to watch. But he said the lesson out of the Players was just maybe just take a breath and slow things down. So if he can take something practical to improve on out of that going into Augusta, a place where he has, you know, pretty good record, it evidently fits his eye. I like him. He's quite short, actually. I think he's like 16-1 or something, but I like it.
Scottie Scheffler's wife Meredith, due with the second child, 29 years of age, has Now, 20 wins and 4 majors, 2 of the Masters titles, 16 top 10s and 25 major appearances. Despite the clumsy footwork, Gary, he was first in approach last year, and I think his approach play and his temperament has been one of the big reasons why he's become now the number one player in the world, whatever Rory has done.
Oh, he's by, you know, he's on a little bit of a lull at the moment, but he's, you know, when he's on, he's by far the best player on the planet. I think Rory's the most loved player on the planet, but Scottie Scheffler is the best player. There's no denying that. His record is brilliant around here. I'm just a bit worried, baby-wise. You know, he pulled out of Houston. We haven't heard anything whether she's Meredith has had the baby yet. He won't play if the baby doesn't come, I don't think. So that depends on that. But I like Oberg too. I think he's, you know, he's second in, on debut. He's a shot behind the two to play and finished bogey treble. So he loves the place. He's got that going back. You know, he's European. He'd always shout for European, I think. There's a lot of players this year. You know, there's lots of guys that...
You think it's open?
I wouldn't be surprised with a first-timer this year. I wouldn't be surprised with rookies going really close.
Chris Goddard.
Yeah, Bridgman is my... He's my rookie pick.
1979.
Yeah, so, and just with the Fuzzy Zoller thing as well, they'll remember him this year. I think it's going to be absolutely phenomenal Masters, and I think there's going to be many different storylines. Obviously, with McIlroy defending, it's wide open, there's lots of guys, and the superstars are not in crazy form. You know,
so Ram, it's just hard to judge Liv. I mean, he won in Hong Kong, but it's just hard to judge where Ram is, for example.
He's going to be ultra keen though, and there's also that thing off the course with the DP Tour and the Ryder Cup, and is he going to rejoin? And he'll be spicy for his first major, I think. And DeChambeau is going to be fascinating to see how he performs.
Like, all joking aside about DeChambeau, he's got what, 2 US Open victories, top 10 finish in 10 majors, and been in contention the last 2 visits to Augusta. He seems to be always keen to improve every aspect of his game. Because there was a time when he was like talking about 67s at Augusta, and he was like almost trying to bludgeon the course. And now, apart from the psychological defeat that he had to McIlroy, you just get the sense before the end of his career he's going to work this out.
This is the course that can't be bludgeoned. And can he figure it out? I mean, that is the question, right? It's whether his iron play is good enough to win. I know he was in the final group with McIlroy on Sunday last year. It was a miracle that he was there. I mean, he was spraying a left, right and centre. Like, his stats for kind of chipping and around the green were off the scale. And then he rolled in a monster putt, almost the full width of the 18th green, to cut Rory's lead to 2 going into Sunday. So, and obviously then he wasn't playing well enough to win, and he vacated the property when he went into the water on 11. So there's a doubt about him as to whether his iron play is good enough. You'll have more insight into kind of the technical aspects of it, and does the speed he needs off the tee kind of mean kind of weaken his iron play? That kind of seems to be an issue with him. So he's a lot to prove whether he's good enough to win it. To be honest,
he's got the arrogance to do it. That's what, you know, all these guys and all the people that you're looking at going, you know, oh, I think, you know, we all want a Hail Mary per se, but it's the people that truly believe that they can win it. They're the people you should be looking at. And he would be in that category.
As Seamus and Touch to say, to Gary's point on longevity and consistency, amazing. This Tiger, 20 years, Mickelson, 19, Els and Rory, 18, the number of years in the top 10 of the World Golf Ranking. If Rory can stay in the top 10 for 26, 27, 28, he'll be in the top 10 for the longest number of years. Rory first got into the top 10 in 2009. JD, my pick is Ludvig Åberg at 16. So fancy Marco Penge at 70 is an outside bet. What do you guys think?
Penge is interesting. He's got the distance. The only thing is a bit like DeChambeau. Is he going to have that little finesse with his mid irons when he needs it? Is he going to have? Can he take enough speed out of it to control the spin? There are the questions he has to answer. And then it's the old reliables. You know, the people that come back. I think Fitzpatrick has a good chance this year.
Playing very well.
He is, and he...
Is he long enough?
Oh, he's playing... Yeah, the distance is not that big.
You don't think so?
I think he puts well. Putting is not the most... Bizarrely, it's not the most important criteria to win around here. It's mid-irons and control of spin. I think he won't be afraid of it. That's half the battle.
Morikawa, Fleetwood, Xander Schauffele.
Schauffele is a big fancy of mine too. I think he'll go well.
I regret to say I think Patrick Reed could go well. A previous winner.
Well, we all need our villains.
He's European now.
He's playing loads on the DP World Tour. And people do forget, or like to forget, he was terrifyingly close to that playoff last year. I mean, he had an eagle putt on 13, I think it was, that honestly was half a roll away from going in the cup, and that would have put him in the playoff. And I think Rory would have been a lot less comfortable in the playoff against Reed than just Justin Rose alone. So, yeah, I think Patrick Reed could have a good week.
Do you think Augusta as a course separates the greats from the good? And do you feel that? Because it seems to be, generally the sense is it takes a good few years, maybe an average of 10 or 11 years to really be in the median point of a winner. Do you think it's a course that needs learning over the years?
It does, but I think a lot of the players get haunted by the place as well. You know, a lot of them probably don't like it as much as, but they're never going to say that publicly. And the fact that it's the first major of the year, everyone is a little more tense than they normally are week in, week out. And it's that build up and trying to micromanage expectations. But just the nuances of the course, you know, you can learn from them, or they can haunt you. And for lots of guys, they've haunted them.
And the putting, I mean, that's you when you're over 6 footer, maybe back for a par.
Yeah, I think they're used to, you know, exceptional speeds week in, week out. Now, I don't think the fear factor with them is quite what it was, you know, because they're putting on exceptionally quick greens week in, week out. It's just everything that goes with it. Like, if we go there as spectators and we're in awe of the place, it's the same for the players. And then that prize at the end of it is, you know, you're there for the rest of your life if you win this thing.
So. Yeah. You know, the one thing I would love about that is, money can't buy this. All the live money, all the money in the world can't buy a membership of Augusta, and it can't buy that seat of the Champions.
Well, it was the chairman of Live, Yasser Al-Rumayyan, wanted a green jacket, wanted membership.
Hasn't got it.
Sure, far away of never getting accepted as a member to Augusta National is to ask to be a member.
You're going the second time around. Yeah. Having been there before as a journalist, are the things that you're looking to do differently
More time in the media restaurant, obviously. I didn't make the most of that the last time.
But are the storylines really. That, I mean, all the storylines have kind of evaporated almost?
Pretty much, like, yeah. I mean, Rory McIlroy said it after he won the green jacket last year. What are we going to talk about this year? I am a little bit worried about that. But it'll serve up great drama. It always does. You know, it's a perfect, the course is, you know, amazing test of golf, etc., fair test of golf. This is what all the players will say. The viewers will say it almost always guarantees drama, just because, exactly to your point, of the pressure, the ghosts around it, and that kind of lovely, especially with the way it's set up on Sunday, you've got to be aggressive, but you can't get too aggressive, and that's the sweet spot of sporting drama.
Gavin Cooney, who wins the Masters?
Ludwig Auber.
Gary Murphy, who wins the Masters?
Xander Schauffele.
I'm going to troll everybody. I'm going to say Patrick Cantlay wins the match. Just to troll everybody. Thank you, lads, for coming in. Enjoy the 4 days.
Cheers.
Appreciate you coming in to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. Somebody's saying Patrick Reed at 33-1. Maybe they're right. Maybe we're wrong. So we've got Football Saturday to come now between 3 and 5. The former League of Ireland manager Shane Keegan and the ex League of Ireland and FAI Cup winning defender Graham Gartland. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Get in touch, please, because we're going to have Football Saturday between 3 and 5 after the news here on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Road Safety Authority. Bringing you awareness of distracted driving this bank holiday weekend.
This is News Talk.